from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
The Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Fortan. Today on the show, I have a very special guest who's working on a project that I think that other people in the atheism community should help out. Now, many of you know that through the years, I've included a lot of different people who have had Indiegogo and Kickstarter campaigns. We had the Hug an Atheist, Atheist Shoes, even a non-atheist movie called Jesus, Don't Let Me Die Before I've Had Sex. So I've made it kind of my personal mission of making sure that people are aware of these projects. And today I have a very special guest who is working on an animated series of animated little movies called the Animated Free Thought Projects. And his name is Josh Sobel. Thanks for joining me, Josh.
No problem.
Now, tell me a little bit first about what the project is and how or why you decided to make it.
Well, back when I was a Christian, and a lot of my atheist friends would kind of point me to lectures and different YouTube videos telling me about kind of why people would turn atheist when they were religious, and none of them really clicked with me kind of because of the whole militant kind of attitude, you know, the way we kind of talk down to Christians a lot of the time, especially when we've come from Christian backgrounds.
Right, you're saying sort of like the natural anger that sometimes people have. Right when they come out is usually the first voice that people hear. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So like when you're a Christian and you're starting to doubt stuff and someone's like, here's a video of an atheist. And they're just like, Christians are stupid, blah, 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 blah. It's like, I don't want to hear this. So kind of the driving force behind this idea was to kind of get a voice out there or a series of voices out there that would have more of a compassionate attitude. Kind of, I understand where you're coming from. Myself and the whole team, we've all been religious at some point in our lives for quite a bit for the most part. And so we're trying to definitely come from an attitude of here's some educational material. We get what you're saying. Here are the arguments that you probably haven't been exposed to, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And you're choosing a medium that seems really non-threatening, it seems to me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And especially because like you've got your hundreds of atheist webcam shows on YouTube and everything. So it's like, how do you stand out? And we're like, hey, we're animation majors. Let's just make it animated.
So even at first, you guys, there was the feeling that you wanted to do something even before you thought you'd be using your own specific skills?
Yeah. Like, I mean, we're all members, or a few of us are members of the Free Thought club that we have here at the school and everything. So we're definitely out there trying to help. And then one day it was just like, hey, why aren't we just going a little bit further with this?
Using your talents.
Yeah.
Well, and definitely I think in the scene there hasn't been as much of a artistic move. I feel like we it's very intellectual. Lots of books, but I feel like the art, you know, like I think for a movement to be big, it needs to have a lot of art. Different kinds of arts and things like that, because, you know, we're a visual species, and I think that a lot of us are just like, well, if I can craft a good argument, that should simply be enough. And I think that we have to kind of abandon that idea and start saying, well, perhaps we should embrace some of the tactics that religious people have used. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure that there are probably a couple of Christian cartoons that you guys are being slightly inspired by. Am I wrong?
To an extent, like I definitely grew up watching a lot of the Christian cartoons that my church and my Christian school would show me. But I mean, I haven't seen anything too recent like this. I'm sure they're out there. I just haven't run into them personally.
You weren't running into them when you were trying to defend the dying embers of your faith.
I don't think I specifically ran into any cartoon ones though.
You might still be a Christian though if you had run into a really good one now.
Yeah, I actually did. Like, when I was starting to question this, I'd have a period where I kind of went back to Christianity because of some of these voices that you're talking about. They weren't animated, per se, but they were definitely like, oh my god, these guys, they know what they're talking about. But I just hadn't been exposed to arguments that personally made sense to me. And about what you were saying about how it's all very intellectual, that's another goal we're striving to achieve, which is to make it more relative to people who don't spend hundreds of hours a year researching all this stuff, you know?
Right, or attending lectures for fun.
Yeah, like when I was first shown like Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins talking, like 90% of what they said would just like fly right over my head. So it wouldn't really do a whole lot. So we're definitely, I don't want to say dumbing down, but we definitely kind of want to streamline the arguments and our opinions into like, here's what I used to believe. Here's why I started questioning it. Here is kind of just very simple why we defend what position we would currently hold.
It's also interesting because one of the things that I've been trying to push throughout my podcast, and this incorporates the different kinds of people I've had on the show, is this idea that we need to take a really multi-pronged approach to our conversations with religious people. My last guest, for instance, she very much goes to schools, talks to students about Tom Paine, for instance. That's one of her tactics. Well, if she taught people about one of the founding fathers who was really one of the major early voices to question Christian doctrine, like very seriously, her thought is, well, you know, we can lead people there on their own in different ways. And I think that we have to just understand that there are always different tactics and they're going to work for different people. And that's not something that we've really spent a lot of time researching as a group. Like, what are effective tactics? We just assume, lay out the arguments and it's done.
Yeah. I think that's a tricky thing, because obviously what one person's kind of turning point is from isn't going to be what my turning point is from, kind of thing. So, like, for me personally, with this project, it kind of started out as me saying, well, it took this very specific perspective to convince me of these things, so I'd like to at least get out there and try to find a few people who also see things from the perspective that I did, so that the arguments that convinced me can kind of be out there in a slightly more public way. Mm. So within this project, what I at least personally intend to do is kind of just my answer to the let's share our opinions through webcam on YouTube kind of thing, but through animation. And then we'd also have some of the other categories. Some of the other team members would pretty much be able to just share their opinions or do whatever format they wanted to.
With different animation and a kind of different
message. Yeah,
yeah,
whatever they want, kind of just within the terms we decide on by joining the project, which is just, you know, don't get too angry, don't be too belittling kind of thing.
Well, I think it's interesting when I read, you have a file actually on your Kickstarter thing. Yeah. You wrote a lengthy, I guess we could call it a pamphlet. Can I call it a pamphlet? Because it's not quite lengthy enough to be a book, but...
Yeah, booklet is what I've been saying.
Booklet, okay. So in the booklet, what I thought was interesting, at least this was my analysis from it, is that you seem to have a kind of... like the road towards your disbelief, it was obviously not a very smooth one.
Yeah,
and
it was rocky.
And what I think might be interesting is if you're able to put yourself in the shoes of those different stages... And talking to yourself in those different stages, then, you know, like, for instance, what would I have been able to put out in the early parts of your Christianity that would have convinced you, as an example?
Yeah,
are you taking that attitude when you're building these movies?
Yeah, definitely. Something that's been going around in my mind just in, like animation school and stuff is, like, you have these teachers who are trying to teach you the various workflows and stuff like that, but you kind of get the impression, although they're great people and they know what they're talking about, that it's, like, that whole middle area of learning is kind of gone from their head because it's been so long. So it's kind of like, at least in this, the atheist situation, I was a Christian, now I'm an atheist, and it's kind of like you see those two extremes, but I find it personally really challenging but also important to try to overcome kind of remembering what that middle ground was and trying to kind of analyze it as far as dissecting it, figuring out what it actually took to see the end goal, because it obviously wasn't just the end goal that changed my mind. It wasn't like someone's like, Christianity doesn't make sense, atheism makes sense, and I'm like, what are you talking about? It was like that long, long process that becomes really hard to dissect for me, at least.
Well, it seemed at the time that you didn't know what you didn't know.
Exactly.
And that the reason why the process was so slow is because, you know, in a sense, that we still don't have a good way to guide people, like I was saying before.
Yeah.
Because we lack that strategy, for instance, I may send you something that works for me, which has absolutely, you know, maybe even has the opposite effect on you, where it just only strengthens your opposition to it. So, you know, I always joke that maybe we should be using a scale, and that people who, you know, depending on where you fall on the scale, is the kind of quote-unquote atheist content that you should be digesting. Like, for instance, I always used to put myself at the 8 if 10 is like really crazy. Although recently I think I've moved down to 7, unfortunately. It's AJ. It fucking makes you all kinds of, it pussifies you is what it does. So I figure, you know, like there's a certain contingency of people in 7, and I don't think I'll ever really appeal to the people who are a 1. And in fact, I would discourage them from listening to my show because I feel to some degree that they might think that some of my righteous indignation during the show is perhaps cruel or mean if they don't really understand the perspective of where I'm coming from. So that's one of those tough things because really atheism is complex. There are times when we have that righteous indignation. We want to be mad and we have the right to be, but the people who don't really understand the subtleties of where that anger comes from might just assume that that's our entire personality, and that's a huge problem.
Yeah, definitely, especially when you consider, and this is what happens when I talk to a lot of my Christian friends, is that when you if you talk down about their religion, it's like you're talking down straight to them. So there's just like this whole other level of let's analyze what we believe, and then the other level of let's analyze what we believe, but if you say anything bad about it, you're going to personally insult me, so you better not.
Well, the tough part is that we know, based on studies of the brain, that religious belief is tied to self-identity, which may also be a reason why it takes so long to get rid of it. And I want to go back and talk a little bit about your deconversion, because you mentioned in your booklet that you would consider yourself, at least at the time of your youth, to be a fundamentalist Christian. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely.
And how were you brought up in this? What were some of the things that you were being taught?
It was pretty basic. I was brought up in non-denominational Christianity, and my family and my friends weren't quite as extremist as you might be picturing if you just blanket state like fundamentalist.
Right.
So I definitely had a lot of aspects of my life outside of it, but I mean, from the moment I was born, it was pretty much there's gravity and Jesus died on your cross or died on the cross for your sins. It was like a couple of facts, and Christianity happened to be one of them. And so, I mean, developing your brain during those first few years of your life, when you're figuring out like how logic itself works, you're gonna end up being really, really confused. Or at least I ended up being really, really confused because I hadn't been taught to question. I hadn't been taught to figure out why do I believe what I believe. Like, I was taught to question that as far as everything but religion, but then it was kind of just this magical kind of, you don't even touch this and you don't even think to touch it. And it's not like I was directly taught that. It's just, it was so, so ingrained into my brain from the day I was born that this is what it is.
Right. Or even people in unconscious ways, their reaction to anyone asking questions about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always that subtle implication, even if it's not overt, of saying, what are you doing question?
Yeah. It's just like, if they question it, it's like, oh, they just don't get it. But no one for quite a few years stood up to me and said, well, why don't I get it? I just assumed they didn't get it.
So you had at the time when you were religious, had several atheist friends. Is that correct?
Not really until I got to college. I was raised in the church, and first I was homeschooled, but then through the second half of middle school and throughout high school, I went to a Christian school that was part of my church. So I was surrounded by Christians and only Christians for a very, very long time, and it wasn't until college that I was really exposed to a numerous amount of perspectives on life.
And the second, this Christian education, what did it really mostly involve?
It wasn't the worst. I got a pretty decent education in high school, definitely. I certainly wasn't the best at paying attention to my classes, so I don't specifically remember
high school. I think we can all...
Yeah. I know I had a class that was called apologetics class, but I don't remember a single thing about it. I've probably learned more in the past 6 months through watching videos and reading books and everything about this than I did in actual Christian school.
Well, were you drawing all the time in class? Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, I doodled quite a bit.
Well, you know, there's probably an advantage to you having done that, in fact. Now, I don't know if you are aware of this, but in brain studies, they found that if kids that are taught music or art early on, because of the nature of the brain, the left-right nature, and its kind of redundancy, then you know, your strong artistic side can help later on in life your analytical side. So unbeknownst to you, you did the right move.
That's really interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of...
I recognize that in my life now because I was the opposite of intellectual throughout the first two-thirds of my life, I guess. And it's throughout college that I'm kind of like, wait a second, maybe I don't even want to be doing this art thing. Maybe I'm totally left brain, but that would make a lot of sense according to what you just said.
Well, the reason it's like this, and there's a lot of new schools that are basically deciding to teach math or logical skills much, much later. And this was actually something that I disagreed in your booklet because you had said we all have the ability to be rational from early on. And if you look at studies of kids, you find that their behavior is actually quite psychotic. And the reason is because they lack a part of their brain, the prefrontal cortex, for instance, that's not fully developed that helps you make rational decisions. So in a sense, like this whole idea of trying to teach a kid math when he's 5 years old is a complete waste of time. Instead, what you should be doing is teaching him art, teaching him music, and then when he's probably in grade 11, for instance, you can bring up these subjects because his brain will already be so active and so strong that it really won't be that much of a stretch. That's the way at least modern education is going. So the good news is the reason why it was probably a lot easier for you past college, be like, hey, why am I suddenly thinking logically now? And this is a lot easier, and despite the fact that it seemed like I didn't use that part of my brain. Well, you kind of did. You just didn't know it.
Interesting. I'm going to have to look that up. I haven't heard much about that.
I'm trying to remember. I think it's in the book, The Brain That Changes Itself, although I'm not 100% sure. It could also be Descartes' Error. I've read too many books to actually remember now. It's all melding together. So you're in college, and this is when you're beginning to start having doubts? Is that when the doubts start, or just a little bit before then?
Yeah, it was about halfway through high school where I first started having the doubts. And so my atheism has been a long time coming, but it really took kind of a final dip into Christianity about a year ago for all of these arguments to kind of just click. And I was like, oh my God, this blindfold has finally been lifted. I can see the world clearly for like the first time. So I've only like officially labeled myself as an atheist for less than a year, but it's been a very long process that kind of culminated over this past year or year and a half.
And let me ask you, in this year, does it feel like the longest year of your life?
It does. It's a long year. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, it feels like this is a very, very long year. I've definitely changed personally more this year than I have in my entire life.
Well, I remember I was interviewed Jerry DeWitt. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah, I know who he is.
And during that interview, because he had only maybe come out himself, it had been maybe a year since he had really come out. He had doubted it before, but you know, that whole coming out process and really getting involved had been about a year old. And he was just telling me, he's like, I can't believe how much has happened in 1 year. Like the entirety of my life seems like it could fit in the last year of my life. It's a strange phenomenon. But the reason I think it's like this is because, I mean, of all the new experiences you've really been open to, I remember in your booklet you talked about at first having fear at facing this truth.
Yeah, lots of fear.
What did you fear mostly? What were you afraid of?
I don't know if this necessarily goes for everybody, but the hardest thing for me to do in really any aspect of life is to embrace the idea of being wrong, really about anything. So, like, I've always had a really tough time in critiques in classes where it's like, okay, tell me where I'm wrong. So, with religion specifically, you're raised to believe all these really nice concepts, like Jesus is always there to pick you up, there's the afterlife, all that kind of stuff. And to face the idea, especially for someone like Jerry DeWitt, when your entire life revolves around your religion, for that to think about having to restructure that, I mean, that's just absolutely terrifying. Especially if it's something you've believed since birth.
Right. Well, he called it identity suicide. What he called it. And, that was his fear. Was your fear similar as a kind of identity suicide?
Not so much. No? Because definitely at the time where I was like genuinely starting to embrace this stuff, I was certainly, I mean, I had friends on both sides, and I was lucky enough that my Christian friends were pretty open. They weren't too judgmental, at least on the outside. So I didn't necessarily fear where my life would go, at least at this college level. But I guess you were more asking about the earlier days. So I don't know. Now that I think about it,
tough to say.
I wasn't too much afraid. I wasn't really afraid. I definitely value honesty, and I think I always have. So I've always been up for these things, but I guess it's more of just a mental issue that I just don't like being wrong. I desperately strive to kind of obtain enough information to feel complacent in different areas of my life, which is I think something that's very dangerous. So it's more or less just having to confront myself and say, there is a chance you could be wrong about this, and it might suck for a little bit, but eventually it'll be for the better.
I guess maybe what we can say is it almost feels, maybe it wasn't fear in sort of like that whole, oh my God, what am I going to do? But more almost like a mini panic attack of being like, yeah, holy shit, am I wrong about everything?
Yeah, exactly.
But what about your parents? Because, you know, how do they feel about your atheism?
My dad's another issue. But my mom, my brother, my sister, and my other brother, who actually had an atheist podcast on YouTube a while back, they had all kind of started leaning away from religion a little bit before me. So I was kind of the tail end of that. So there wasn't really any judgment coming from the family. I didn't experience that like a lot of people do.
So like coincidentally, everybody else was moving away from it. Was there a kind of a general, family experience that led everybody there? Because it does seem a little bit unusual that almost everybody would be going down that road at almost the same time.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I know for at least my dad moved us from New York to Florida when I was younger, and he did it because he said that God told him to. And I don't necessarily think any of us actually regret the move. It led to a lot of great things, but I think at least for my mom, it's just that nothing ever went right for her. So I guess she just started to doubt God and maybe kind of hear the stuff coming from my older brother who had left Christianity and was like hardcore just opposition. So I've been recently talking to them a little bit about it, and I'm supposed to Skype with my older brother pretty soon this week to kind of talk about it, because they kind of kept a difference between them and us. Like we were the kids, we were going to school, learning all this stuff about God, about Christianity. And I don't know if maybe my mom told him to like kind of don't talk to us about it or what. It's honestly kind of a blur to me. We were kind of kept out of the loop, I guess.
Well, it's not unusual. I mean, I know that Michael Behe, remember the Irreducible Complexity guy? He has a son who was a non-believer, and he basically kicked him out of the house and forbade him to talk to his brothers and sisters. Because I think that, in a sense, religious people, whether or not they will admit it, will recognize that there is something inherent about the arguments of non-belief that seem almost impassable, like it can't be beaten. That the argument against these positive claims, as you say in your booklet, are non-existent and can easily be dismissed. And I think that that's a real fear, because I have not met at least one Christian that didn't have serious doubts. They may not talk about it, but I think those serious doubts come from the realization that a lot of this so-called proof is really just bunk.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the biggest, if you were to ask me what the biggest hurdle, or not the hurdle, but the biggest blindness that I had that needed to be overcome was that, like you said, I didn't know what I didn't know. It's like all Christians that ever taught me anything would teach me that they've done the research, that they have the answers to these questions, and that, you know, the evolutionists are just making stuff up, and they feed you all these ideas that sound great coming from their end. But like when they tell you about what evolution is, which of course they don't believe in, and a lot of the time it will be a version of evolution that does not exist. And so there were just all these ideas in my head where it was like, well, atheists can't be right about this thing because blah, 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 that my Christian friend told me. But if I had actually talked to an atheist, it would have said, no, you're completely misrepresenting me. But there was no atheist in my life to say that. So I kind of just assumed for, you know, however 15, 16, 17 years that my side was the right side. And it took quite a few years to say, wait a second, I could be seriously misled about this.
And what about the way that religious people in your circles talked about atheists in general? Was there kind of a mild vilification, or how were they perceived?
I don't know if I'd say vilification. There wasn't too much trash talking. I definitely came from Christian circles that valued love, at least. But there was definitely kind of them and us as a very distinct separation. And it's like, oh, they fell away and they'll just come running back soon. Don't you worry, kind of thing. So it was kind of like they just always reference them as lost sheep that will eventually come back. But I mean, I don't know many that actually have come back.
They tend to be rare. It does happen once in a while, but as usually occurs, the people who say we're atheists and go back didn't necessarily have the strongest atheism possible. And I think that, you know, in a certain degree, we can all say that we were atheists at a point before religion was shoved in our, you know, down our throats.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think atheism is the neutral position on the God issue. I mean, I certainly don't believe that there's some inherent knowledge about the existence of a creator that wasn't imprinted there from prior generations of social evolution, I guess I could call it.
Well, I also, you know, you called it basically these positive claims. I usually say something similar. I say that, well, atheists make one fewer assumption about the nature of the universe than religious people do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not more complicated than that. It does lead to a lot of different conclusions, for instance, by eliminating that assumption. Because, you know, as most atheists will try to communicate with religious people with various degrees of success... Oh, hold on a second. There's a train passing by. Okay, it's good. With various levels of success, is that the assumption itself brings so much other baggage that really kind of blinds you to other possibilities. At one point, it was whether or not the sun revolved around the Earth, and then later it was like, well, the universe is only as big as the galaxy or the solar system. You know, it's a constant push because of just one assumption. And its influence on people's minds.
Yeah. If there was one thing that I have learned from this that is more beneficial, I think, and that could be beneficial if other people adopted it, is that we absolutely have to stop assuming, as Lawrence Krauss says, that the universe should conform to our common sense. I mean, that's, I guess, taking it another step further. I guess the more basic version of that would just be, let's stop assuming that our current understanding of anything is the best understanding of anything. And then especially when the Bible specifically talks about some of this stuff. And so you have people saying, well, we could never alter our perspective on this. We absolutely have to know this thing. And no matter how much evidence to the contrary you provide me with, I cannot change my mind because I've already decided that the Bible knows more about science than science itself.
The Bible is science.
Yeah, I saw a meme the other day, an image that said something along the lines of that scientists or atheists would read thousands of books in their life and still know that they have more to learn, and a religious person will read one book and say that they know everything. Which I think is really accurate.
Well, I think if you achieve success and you start making some of these cartoons, one thing that I would really like to have addressed in a what's what I'm looking for here in an open and inviting manner is the accusation that we are arrogant in our assumptions.
Yeah, ridiculous. And I've had a few Christian friends recently tell me that our perspective is the arrogant one.
Right, and I think that, you know, how do you think you would go about, because this is, you know, you could admit if you don't know, but let's just brainstorm here. How could we go about politely telling a person who thinks that they know not only that God exists, but what he wants, that is the height of arrogance? How do we do that?
I guess for the most part, off the top of my head at least, it seems that you'd have to pretty much just trace back to why the Bible isn't trustworthy. I mean, if someone's already accepted that the Bible is completely inerrant and trustworthy, then there's not much you can do to tell them that it's not. I mean, regardless of how arrogant their Bible may be or how arrogant they view it as, they're not going to care if they're that type of Christian, you know?
So you're saying that just the Bible is kind of like the blinders for a horse, so he doesn't see the, you know, anything else around him.
Yeah.
So, is there a friendly way to dismantle the Bible? Because I'm doing that right now. I got to tell you, I'm not being really friendly about it.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, like we were talking about, like, they're going to get offended. There's no way. I mean, when you're talking to a Christian about this stuff, both sides are going to be offended at some level.
Right. Well, they'll feel that it's probably real personal.
Yeah.
And that you're being a big meanie saying it. Maybe that's final evolution. Be like, well, you may have been right, but damn it, you were mean.
Yeah. Like, I guess I get it because I've been there, but like, just the other day, I got into kind of an argument with some of my Christian friends, and I was like, I got a little angry, but I still never said anything about them personally. And then their response is, of course, attacking me as a person, when I was just attacking something that they believe.
Well, as we mentioned before, the distinction is not made. And maybe even part of the fear that that you talked about, or the difficulty in people really being able to just say, boom, I'm an atheist, is that it really does, just that word, kind of fundamentally change you.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much baggage with that word.
Which is ironic that people are like, oh, well, I don't like to call myself that. I just don't believe in God.
Yeah.
And you almost feel you're like, you're missing that final step. It hasn't happened yet in your mind, has it?
It makes me really sad that... Have you seen the video on the big think that Neil deGrasse Tyson did about the words?
I posted it and I fucking shellacked him. I shellacked him. And I got so much shit even from my own fans. And I said, listen, if you do not believe that you go around pretending that you don't, you're not being, you don't have intellectual integrity as far as I'm concerned.
It's the problem.
Oh, sorry, you cut out. What was that?
Oh, I was just saying he's helping the problem. He's not solving it, or rather he's enhancing the problem.
Well, I had one of the things that I posted, and I said this incorrectly, was I said, well, you know, he wants to be the next Carl Sagan, but he won't admit that he's an atheist. And Carl Sagan never said publicly that he was one. Although, you know, he died in 1997. So, and James Randi has come out and said, you know, I've talked to him and probably, you know, smoked pot with him, said straight up, I'm an atheist. But, you know, like, I think all of us would have probably even loved Carl a little bit more if he would have just made that extra declaration of just saying, like, just be honest, Carl. Just tell the people, even if they're going to fucking hate you.
Yep.
But, you know, I think that we're still at that stage where, and maybe this is another good reason why people should go to Kickstarter and help the campaign, is that the perception is still from, you know, religious people that we are no better than rapists. And that's disturbing.
Yeah,
that's frightening. Yeah, I'm like, how do we combat that?
There's definitely, I mean, my Christian friends are pretty good about this. They certainly think that atheists can be moral and that, like, they get our worries. But I mean, the stuff in the Bible about how atheists are fools, this, I think it's Romans 1 or Romans 9 maybe, where Paul's talking about how you are just a fool to not recognize your own God. And I think we were talking something about this earlier, about how do we convince them at this basic introductory level. And I think it's to say, hey, we're both after the same thing here. We're both after truth, which Carl Sagan says, like, in Contact, which I love, my favorite movie. They talk about how we're all after the same thing, which is truth, but we use different tools. And I think Christians use the same tools as us in every single aspect of their life, except religion. And that, I think, was kind of my final step, was to say, whoa, I am analyzing every aspect of my life in the same way, except for religion. Why am I doing that? Why am I restraining my ability to reason when it comes to religion? There's got to be something wrong with that. And of course, there was, and eventually I came to realize that.
What would you say to, let's say, the you 4 years ago about life as an atheist? Because I don't know how you probably thought back then what it would be like, because you mentioned there were some struggles. But what would you have said to, you know, that version of yourself to kind of speed the process along a little?
Well, 4 years ago, I was pretty apathetic to it all. Like, I had doubts, but I just hadn't been pointed in the right direction at all. So I was kind of just drifting back and forth, kind of focusing on other areas of my life. And if I were to go back and talk to that version of me, I would say that you are going to meet some Christians that are going to paint Christianity in a very positive light. and it's going to make a lot of sense to you, and you're actually going to come to hear some arguments that make a lot of sense, but please, please, please do not accept them without hearing the other side.
This was when you were in France, is that right? When
yes,
you had met some
yes.
French. You know what I find is a bit of the irony in being a bunch of French people telling you how good Christian is?
Well, it was like we were all Americans studying over there.
Oh,
actually.
See, I thought they were French because I'm like, have you ever heard of the Cathars? Cathars? They were wiped out.
All American.
Oh, so they were evangelizing? Was it an evangelizing mission for Americans in France?
No. It was, I was studying abroad with my school, so there were about, I think, maybe 50 of us or 80 of us, I don't remember, over there from my school, the Savannah College of Art and Design, and they own pretty much a large chunk of a southern French town up on a mountainside. It's called Lacoste, and so they send different majors over there each quarter semester. And so I went over there this past summer, and there was a group of like five friends that are really awesome. I'm still good friends with all of them. And I was kind of in such a almost depressed, apathetic state where I was just like, what is there left? I can't find any motivation to do any of this artwork or anything. And so it was at that point where, I mean, of course, I don't want to say they're taking advantage of me, but I was definitely in a moment of weakness. And I was kind of like, I'm just going to latch on to this Christian thing and see if it has anything for me, because I see the joy and the happiness that's in all of my Christian friends. And so it took until kind of after that summer to say, wait a second, it may have made me really happy to be a Christian, but that still has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not it's true and whether or not it's causing damage in other areas.
Well, it's interesting. They must have been a little bit of a hard thing at that point, because I think that a lot of people, right when they reach that, well, I'm happy, they figure that's enough.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're happy, and meanwhile you're like, but I'm not intellectually fulfilled.
Yep. I mean, for a while I was. Are you familiar with Tim Keller, who wrote The Reason for God?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, he's kind of like, at least in the Christian circles I've been around, he's kind of the go-to apologist book. And I actually really, really like him. He's definitely a thinker. He values reason. But, I mean, now I see that a lot of his arguments are very flawed as far as like fine-tuning, cosmological, all that kind of stuff. But they pointed me to his book. I read it, as well as C.S. Lewis's Bare Christianity. And the arguments did start to make sense to me, but that was only because I hadn't been pointed to the correct responses from atheists. I had been pointed to Hitchens and Dawkins, but it was really not until I was pointed to Matt Dillahunty and The Atheist Experience where I could actually get that I used to be a Christian mindset, mm-hmm. which was what finally pushed me over, because, I mean, the horsemen of atheism, they weren't Christians. They're kind of just like, I see this world for what it is. I think this religion thing is kind of dumb. Let's talk about how dumb it is.
Right. Or if they were, but, I mean, they had abandoned it so long ago. I think Hitchens abandoned it when he was like 12 or something.
Okay.
Like, that's early.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, really connected with the people that host The Atheist Experience. They really were the first ones to make it click for me. To say, hey, I get where you're coming from. This is what I used to think. Here's what's messed up about it.
So let's talk about the project again. Now, currently there's about 10 days to go in the campaign.
Yeah.
And you are just a little under halfway. Is that correct?
Yes.
But the thing I want people to understand that are listening to this podcast right now is you guys are not asking for an exorbitant amount here.
No.
You're asking for all less than $3,000. And what is that money for?
It's almost like a little bit for microphones and stuff, but that's not too much. It's mainly the software. And I've definitely had a few people say, well, why aren't you using freeware? And that's just because the experiences I've had with animation freeware software have not been very good. And I mean, we've been going to school for all these years, trained in these specific workflows that we know work for us, but our student licenses are about to expire. We graduate within a few months of now. So in order to keep doing this stuff, we really need to buy actual licensed versions, which are really, really expensive. And for like the four or five of us that are committed to working on the project, it would go to buying the licenses for those.
Well, one of the things that I want to encourage listeners, so if 10% of you, and I know that's probably pushing it with you guys, but I'd really like for you to consider it, go to the site. And what's the even lowest donation that people can have? Is it $1 or something?
As far as rewards go, I don't remember. It might be $1, but you can donate whatever amount you want. That's just regardless of the reward you choose.
Right. But I mean, there's a couple of variety of them. I think that even a person is like, well, I don't necessarily want the reward. I'm like, you know, $1, $2, $3, $10 will go a long way. And
yeah, it,
you know,
really will.
And what we kind of need to do, as you know, like for the listeners of the show here, is help him with a little bit of momentum. I think you guys remember what it was like when I was doing my Kickstarter / Indiegogo thing, because the Kickstarter fucked off like 24 hours before it was supposed to be funded. So I had a bit of a nightmare experience myself, having to do two in a row. So I understand the stresses. And plus, you know, it's Kickstarter, so he doesn't get shit until he makes that number.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit of that pressure. So I think that one of the things, and I've criticized the scene, the atheism scene, about this constantly, and I want to drill it home because I don't think that people know, is that we're a bunch of fucking cheapskates, okay? When you look at other groups, Jews, Scientologists, whatever, these wackos are spending exorbitant amount of monies, and they are a fraction of our numbers. But I think the problem is that all of us that are non-believers think the fight's over. They're like, oh, the arguments are won. I can go home now. And what I don't think that people realize is that, no, it's actually just begun. There's 80% of the population out there that is still living under a delusion. Did we forget this somehow collectively?
So, yeah, I completely agree with you.
So, I mean, I think it's going to be one of those slow lessons. Because, I mean, imagine the same way that we said that sometimes the atheism message can fall flat because what's our first response? Anger, right? Like when we come out, we feel angry or betrayed or whatever. And we also are like, well, I'm free of the tithe. I don't need to tithe anymore. And I'm like, well, the tithe is a kind of tax. It's a tax for a group or organization to try to achieve certain ends. Now, the ends that Christian groups or evangelical groups are trying to achieve, I think, are fucking disturbed and evil. But how else are we going to fight this if we don't have our own fucking version? It's a tough one, right? Where's this money's going to come from? So I want to bring this back home. People, think about this. This is a worthy project. He needs $3,000. This is it. And he's got 10 days to do it. So I want everyone who's sitting on their fucking fat asses and hasn't done anything, and if it's just even a dollar, I don't care. You fucking put that dollar in his account and you try to make this happen. Let's do this. Yeah?
Thank you so much.
Well, you know, like I said before, look, I feel your pain. I've been trying to do this professionally for a very long time, so I know how tough it can be. And, you know, I also know that sometimes some of the other atheist blogs or groups don't always share information or spread other projects that other non-believers are doing. And I think that this is a huge problem, again, that we need to do a lot more. And I've taken it upon myself. Like, even today, I was kind of cutting down podcasts to one a week, but yours is important enough that they're going to get two podcasts. So they should thank you, and that's going to be a dollar. Well, I think with that, we're going to wrap it up. Josh, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thanks for trying to really, I don't know, liven up the atheism scene with some different content that tries to reach religious people.
And thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Well, we're going to keep we're going to keep track of it, and I'll try to give periodic reminders through the site, and hopefully even next show. I think I have another Kickstarter person that's going to be on, so, you know, trying to get people to remember, saying, like, this is one of the ways that we actually support people in the scene. Kickstarter is an easy one. It doesn't take a lot of effort. You just go there, credit card or whatever, PayPal, boom, it's done.
It's through Amazon now.
Or through Amazon, right? And, you know, there's lots of the other projects, like the Hug an Atheist that I had. I think that she was in a similar situation. She had 10 days to go, and she was sort of way off her mark. And then after that, sort of like she got a ton of support, and I think that that's just, you know, sort of like how we need to operate. Be like, hey, we see someone we like, boom, let's turn that shit on.
Yeah, there was that Godless Comics one that actually was what inspired me to kind of take this to Kickstarter a few weeks back. That one was really successful.
Is it the one that's like the Chick Track one?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, see, that's who I wanted to have on the show, actually. Because I had thought about doing my own Chick Tracks, but I am lazy. So I'm glad somebody else did it.
Yeah, I like their stuff a lot.
Yeah, well, the artist is actually really good as well. He's done some pretty awesome paintings. And I think one of the packages is actually a painting from it, which is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's got one of Hitch's on their Kickstarter page.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's probably my favorite one right there. But that's because I was, you know, big on his nuts. Like probably most of us, let's admit it. Once we started understanding him, took a little while,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it took me a while. He still goes over my head in a few places, but
all you got to do is read his book about three times and you'll get it. It takes several read throughs. You know, it's just the size of his brain was a little bit intimidating.
Real quick about Hitchens, one of the big things that turned me off from atheism was the debate between William Lane Craig and Christopher Hitchens, where Craig lines up all these arguments and he's like, if you don't attack every single one of them and defeat them, you will lose this debate. And then Hitchens is like, what? I thought we were talking about some other stuff. But I did not see that from the correct perspective when I was exposed to that.
Well, it's one of the tactics, actually, of apologetics is to try to kind of bog us down with arguments that they themselves have no proof of. So it's like, prove my improvable argument or lose.
It's like, my human brain can only make sense of this ridiculous idea in a specific way. Therefore, it is true. How dare you actually say that there might be an option we haven't been able to conceive of?
and my appreciation love of Hitchens was always that he was the atheist that, like, he was the one that took no prisoners. And like I said, he was the 10, you know, on that whole, I'm mad, I'm angry. And I'm like, there's so much of us that needed that voice, because that's a part of how we feel. Not entirely. Mm-hmm. But it is a small part, and I'm like, that was his contribution. And now, lastly, before I go, actually, I just have one question. How do you think your cartoons will rank on that scale of 1 to 10, by the way?
1 to 10. This was a scale of pretty much how militant they are? Or?
Yeah, I would say sort of like, you know, most of the videos that you saw that were angry, we'll put them sort of like in the same general category as me, from, say, 6 to 10 as being like the hardest. Where would you put yourself?
I'd say they'd range from 6 to 8 generally.
So still pretty mean. So still a little bit mean or a little bit angry.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some areas that it's a little hard to avoid, just from the very nature of the disagreement, you know. But for the most part, we're at least going to try to say, hey, we get you. We get why you understand this. Just please try to take a moment to see this from the third person, even if that third person perspective is one that will insult you.
Well, the trick is always, if you're going to do that, use humor. Humor fixes all situations. You just got to be funny. That's the key.
Unless you're poking fun at them.
No, even then, if you're funny enough, you can get away with murder. Trust me. I don't even know why I wasn't beaten when I was younger, because I was just such a fucking loudmouth little prick. But apparently I was funny enough that I didn't get beaten. So you just have to have a threshold of hilarity. Well, with that, thanks for coming on, eh?
All right. Thank you so much.